Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Steve Mistler and Mal Leary at the State House in Augusta. Now, we've been talking a lot on the Pulse about Senator Susan Collins and the Trump impeachment. Now, the impeachment trial is finally here, and Mal Leary, on that front at least, there isn't a whole lot much more to say, is there?
There certainly isn't, Erwin, but you got to remember, Senator Collins is under tremendous pressure in Washington. She can't leave her office and walk down the hall without attracting a gaggle of reporters and oftentimes cameramen and the whole bit, always asking questions about the latest development of the day about the impeachment process. And that's what happened this week, where she was asked about bringing in additional witnesses to testify before the Senate. And she ended up very clearly saying, well, that's something we ought to consider bringing in. And she was immediately trumpeted on all the news networks as being the first Republican senator to say, yes, indeed, we ought to at least look at it. So that has been part of the development this week. It is so incremental. And quite frankly, I was listening back to the interview I did with her a couple of weeks ago, and she virtually said the same thing then. But I don't think people really picked up on it.
Well, she is facing some other difficulties in news breaking this week.
Yeah, the other thing, Erwin, that she was confronted with in one of these gaggles that Mal was describing was right in the aftermath of some of these new revelations, the House released some text messages from this guy, Lev Parnas, who is an associate of Rudy Giuliani and somehow connected to the president. And it was some really disturbing correspondence between him and this other person who was running for Congress in Connecticut, who may not be much longer because he's now under investigation by the FBI. It appears that he was basically surveilling a U.S. ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, who has since been ousted from that position and a key figure in this entire mess. What Collins was asked was, okay, you know, what do you think about this additional testimony and evidence? And she seemed to be almost kind of annoyed that it had materialized. That was some of the interpretation that a lot of people had taken from it anyway, where she was being asked to comment on new evidence being introduced in the Senate trial. And her response was something along the lines of, well, this just shows that the House rushed its impeachment inquiry. The wrath that she received upon uttering those words was instantaneous because, of course, this new evidence only surfaced this week because a judge had allowed Parnas to release it to the House just recently. You know, she was really taken to task by a lot of people in the news media and certainly political commentators and certainly at home for basically some people would interpret it as being unwilling to consider the new evidence. She had to come out with a statement clarifying that she's willing to receive all the new evidence. It just really just illustrates this pressure that she's under. How every single move or utterance that comes out of her is so heavily scrutinized. And I think that's going to continue, especially next week, although the Senate has apparently adopted some rules where these gaggles will be a little bit more difficult during the trial because they're basically closing off press access to this trial. It's not going to be the traditional access that we're accustomed to or they're accustomed to down there.
Mm. Well, at least to her credit, she didn't lash out the way Martha McSally of Arizona did against a CNN reporter. So,
yeah, that's right. That's a great point. She was at least trying to answer the question. Martha McSally basically was upset that she was even asked a question.
Right.
You know, that was just one part of the bad news she faced this week. There was a new poll that came out that showed that she's the most unpopular senator in the country now, surpassing the Senate leader, Mitch McConnell. What I found interesting in that poll is how you could see the trend line basically from Trump taking office just slowly go down and down and down. She did get a little bit of a bump from Republicans who, you know, as we recall, sometimes look at her suspiciously because they're not convinced that she's one of them. She did get a bump post-Kavanaugh, but it was not nearly enough to eclipse the loss that she's seeing among Democrats, and more importantly, I think, independents. She went from a -5 in favorability among independents in the third quarter of last year. She was -10 in the fourth quarter of last year. It just feels like the walls are closing in a lot of ways on her, and impeachment is a perfect example of that.
We have to be careful here, though, Erwin, in that these polls about ratings are not against somebody else. we haven't seen a matchup, say, between her and Sarah Gideon, or her and Ross LaJeunesse, or any of these other people who are running for the office. And what happens, or tends to happen, is that you can have an incumbent in a real problem early in the polls, but then the other party nominates someone, and all of a sudden they don't look quite so bad. So we're so early in the process that while this rating is of note and certainly of interest to those of us who watch politics closely, we got to wait and see what happens post-primary when we've got actual candidates of both parties going at one another.
I think that's a good point. I also did note in that morning consult poll that if you look at President Trump's ratings, they are also down. And I think it's kind of interesting to kind of see that the linkage that may exist between his fortunes in Maine and hers.
That is exactly right. I mean, I think Martha McSally, we mentioned her in her comments about the CNN reporter. She has seen her favorability dip, but she's taken sort of this opposite approach. She's kind of rushing to Trump's corner in his defense as a way to sort of buffer this loss that she's seeing among moderates and independents. Collins is still trying to be who she always has been. It's sort of staying in the middle. As that poll demonstrated, it hasn't necessarily benefited her. Now, people will take issue with whether Collins is actually in the middle because they're going to say that she's voted with Trump more often since he's been in office. But at the same time, her fortunes do seem to be tied to the president.
And one of the things we have to note, that even though Trump won the second district by 10 points, we then had a Democrat, Jared Golden, take the district 2 years later by a very small margin. This goes to the independent nature of Maine voters. There's a very real possibility that Trump could take this the second district again, but Jared Golden be reelected. I mean, voters are very independent in our state and vote more for the person than the party.
All right. Governor Mills delivers her State of the State address on Tuesday evening, the 21st. Maine Public will air it live. Mal, you've been talking with the governor. Any hints about what she's going to be proposing?
Yeah, we're fortunate enough to have her take some time from writing her speech to come over and talk about some of the elements she wants to talk about for this second session of her term as governor. And she says, you know, a lot of it's going to be trying to continue the efforts they made the first time. They were successful in expanding Medicaid, but there are still problems dealing with some insurance coverage, particularly for small businesses. So she's pushing legislation there. She said that there's need to move forward on climate change. There will be some legislation on that. She says her climate change council will be making recommendations over the course of her entire four-year term to try to get to that goal. So it's going to be a speech, I think, of continuing the efforts that she tried to move forward as a result of being elected, the inaugural speech of more than a year ago now. And we'll certainly see some new things because she has set up this Office of Innovation in the Future, and some of their ideas may show up in this second session for lawmakers to consider. But there's always a real possibility that they will be put off because, of course, as the governor acknowledges, you know, this is an election year and that, efforts between the two parties will be hindered somewhat by members of both parties who are more concerned about reelection than about the legislation before them. And she speaks from knowledge, having served in the legislature herself.
Now let's talk about two referendum campaigns that are underway, though there's only one that's actually been scheduled. That would be the people's veto vote on the state's new vaccination law. Steve, there's a lot more money being pledged by the people who want to keep the vaccination exemptions than the legislature wants to get rid of.
Yeah, it's a 3-to-1 margin at this point in terms of money raised by the people who want to repeal the law that was passed last year that would eliminate religious and philosophical exemptions for school kids who, in order to go to school, they have to receive vaccinations. Those exemptions are going away. And it drew an immediate backlash. They were pretty quick to get this people's veto on the ballot. What is interesting to me is the timing of the actual people's veto vote, which is on Super Tuesday in March, the same day as the Democrats hold their presidential primary. So how does that affect the potential outcome of this referendum or this people's veto. And I can't quite figure out how I feel about it, frankly, because on one hand, you would think, because this was a Democratic-initiated proposal, the law that they're trying to repeal, that it would have the support of Democrats and therefore would lose in a landslide in an election that's being held at the same day as a presidential primary. But I'm not necessarily convinced of that, because it's not just Republicans or people who are very religious and they want that choice, or libertarians even. There is a lot of Democrats or liberals that also feel the same way. And it's like the farther you go on the continuum of the political polls, they sometimes have a way of meeting together. And I kind of wonder if that will be at play during the people's veto vote on Super Tuesday.
And it's really difficult to figure out, Erwin, because if you look at some past elections, issue referendums have actually drawn more voters than the presidential race in 2016. So, I mean, when you look at that, people are going to be turning out, I think, on the vaccine referendum, regardless of the presidential primary. Then you've got the presidential primary factor, which I think is real. But at the same time, it could be overwhelmed by the numbers of people who are more concerned with the issue of vaccinations than anything to do with the presidential race.
Well, lastly, there's the referendum that isn't, at least not yet. That's over the power line Central Maine Power wants to build in the Western Woods. Now, Steve, you can't sit in this state at this point and watch a YouTube video without first seeing an ad for the New England Clean Energy Connect project with beautiful pictures of the very woods they want to run this power line through.
The prevalence of those ads that you're seeing on YouTube or on television, broadcast television, is reflected in their campaign finance reports that they posted this week. They pulled in $2.3 million and spent nearly all of it, all on advertising, all on a persuasion campaign that really is necessary, I think, because of the deterioration in CMP's brand. This is the CMP project, of course. I think they have a big hole to dig out of in terms of winning over public opinion on the worthiness of this project. So they've got started very early. They're spending a lot of money very early. I think that's indicative of the hole they have to dig out of. You know, what is also interesting is that they're totally eclipsing the opponents of this project, at least in terms of campaign dollars. It's not even close. And so what I will be watching to see is if they can somehow flip public opinion on this, and I don't know if they can do it or not, but if they are able to do that, can the opponents of the corridor level the playing field in terms of spending? And we'll see if they are able to do it. But that is something I think is going to be very key to determining this referendum, if it indeed materializes. It hasn't even qualified for the ballot yet, but right. We'll see if it does.
Yeah. Mal, anything to add?
Well, I think the interesting fact about this potential referendum is that it will be on the ballot in a presidential election year. And that is going to be really interesting. As I said a few minutes ago, I think there may well be more people turn out on, if this referendum goes on the ballot, will turn out to vote on this than votes for president, because there people are really, really interested, fired up. We're seeing people show up in great numbers at town meetings to vote against this, to vote against local towns taking a position against it. When you see that kind of thing going on, even though they're spending all this money, I'm not sure how that's going to play out with Maine voters.
Right. And just one thing I'd add is that spending doesn't necessarily equal success. Let's go back a couple of years ago when there was this very controversial casino campaign in southern Maine. And I mean, those guys spent, I can't even remember, it was like over $10 million, if I recall correctly. And they got clobbered. I think it was the worst, the most lopsided referendum, and at least in recent memory. And so spending does not necessarily equal success.
Maine Public's State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler and Senior Political Reporter Mal Leary. And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We post new versions of our podcast each Friday afternoon. You can download it at mainepublic.org/politicalpulse or wherever you get your podcasts. You can hear most of the Political Pulse Sunday mornings during Weekend Edition, and a shorter excerpt on Monday's Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rom Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz.